Tuesday, August 25th, 2020, session of TeamSpeak for Tangerine SDR and Hempside. My name is Dave, KB0S. And this week, I've been out, but I'm back. And I also started teaching class today. So this was my first day of class. And we all were masked up and we had socially distant spacing and we had all kinds of things, face shields, all that kind of stuff. So that was about it for me. Next on the list, we have Nathaniel, W2NAF. Sorry.
Thank you very much, Dave. Things are going fine here. This is now my second week of teaching, and we are also socially distanced and everything. So far, it's going well. It's just been incredibly busy trying to keep up with everything, but somehow we are surviving. W2NAF, back to net.
Fine business. Next on the list is Scotty, WA2DFI. Go ahead, Scotty.
Okay, thanks, Dave. I don't know how I snuck in so early on the list since I just got here. But anyway, been trying to finish up the magnetometer changes. Got the CAD guy. I think I put him in a bad mood today. But I got the CAD guy who making the changes. I should get them. I expected them this afternoon. I didn't get them. I expect them tomorrow. So we should be all ready to fire that off. And again, the rest of the time been working on the data engine. Finally, I think I got closure on the I/O pins. I think it's going to be a little slim on the Raspberry Pi interface for extra pins, but I think we'll have enough to at least make a go of it. And I don't know if I told you, Tom, I was a little worried about the DDR comment you made last week. Well, I did a little investigation, and we do, in fact, have DDR registers on all of the I/O pins. So that would be a killer if it wasn't. And I checked out the speed ratings, and they're rated at 310 megahertz. So I think we should have enough margin to do what we need to do. So that's a little bit less stress now, maybe next week. I'm looking forward to next week to getting this thing wrapped up. And I'm going to have a design review with the folks here and include as many people here as would like to see the finished schematic. It's pretty massive and complicated, but, you know, you want to see it, we'll put it out there for everyone to see. So anyway, back to you, Dave.
Fine business. And next on the list is Bill, AB4EJ. Go ahead, Bill.
Thanks, Dave. Good evening to you. Good evening to the net. I spent last week having a little minor heart surgery, in case you can call any heart surgery minor, and so I haven't accomplished anything really to speak of. Are you getting my audio? There was
yes.
A funny tone. Okay.
There you go.
So anyway, I'm okay. They just had to put a couple of stents in. Had some chest pain on when I would exercise, and so they went through and did that, and had kind of last week was kind of hairy, but we're back in the position right now, taking a look at trying to finalize all the stuff I've been doing on splitting out so I can run multiple channels simultaneously and all that stuff. So when I say one channel zero is going to be the ring buffer stuff, and it supports multiple sub channels within that channel. Channel one is FT8 and channel two is Whisper. And so I've got the first couple channels to where they work. And I've got to iron out some software races and some little mess that goes on between the different subcomponents of the Tangerine control stuff on the local host. So back to net.
Well, fine business. And next on the list is Dave Witten, KD0EAG. Go ahead, Dave.
Hello, everyone. Not sure what I've been doing last week. I can't remember. The time goes by. It's a blur. I guess I've been going back and forth with Julius, Maddie a good bit, and he's been continuing to capture data from, I believe, a couple different instances of the magnetometer module. And I've been writing some software and doing some other things, but writing some software, a little bit in Python. Haven't worked on this project too intensely just lately, so I don't have too much to report. But that's pretty much it for me. Over to you, Dave.
Fine business. I did want to add one thing. Reading the mail, it seems like Julius's ground buffering has been stabilizing the temperature somewhat. Is that true?
Oh, certainly. If you're asking me, yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Very much so. That helps an awful lot. He was concerned for a while about whether there were some, whether the supposed temperature insensitivity that's kind of built into the module is as good as what PNI says it is. It's probably not perfect, but given a little stabilization of the temperature environment, it's probably pretty good. And that's why we were experimenting with drilling holes in the ground with little augers. And I've actually got a piece of, looks like five inch PVC pipe and one of those things that kids whop each other with in the swimming pool. It's kind of like what it's similar to what the Themis project people were using to bury, but essentially it fits perfectly inside that PVC pipe. And as soon as I get a couple of caps stick on there, it gets you at least an inch and a half of closed cell protection on all sides. And I want to see how that does, especially when you bury it in the ground. But he's been working on that and having good results all around, I think. And he sent me a lot of more detail on how he's wired up the things he's been doing, because he's done it. He knows what he's doing well enough to just kind of wing it and look at one approach or another. And he did a lot with the Spark Fun remote I2C units before he had the ones that I made. And he's used that all to do a lot of down and dirty testing in the real world out there.
Very good. Well, next on the list, I have Dave McGaw in 1HAC. Go ahead.
Good evening, everyone. Didn't have much time to work on magnetometers this week. I was working on big loop antennas, trying to make something that's easily deployable out in the field and not by me, by someone else. It's like figuring out how to pack a parachute. But looks like things are going well on that one. And I was also following the E-Loran testing, which continues. I hope they don't turn it off. I know they will, but it's been that's been going well. It's we've been seeing it transferring basically cesium quality at a distance. So I guess that's it for me. Back to Net.
Fine business. And next on the list, we have Dev. Go ahead, Dev.
Hello, thank you. It has been a good week for me, and I had a good day. I started seeing detecting the chop ionosondase signatures with the ETOS device. So I have first proof that I'm detecting with the ETOS N200 device that I'm using as FDR. So from going onwards, I have to build ways to find time for the specific frequencies, and the project will move on. So I think I have moved a step ahead. Thank you.
Very good. And next on the list is Elizabeth. Go ahead.
Hi, everyone. Can you hear me?
Yes, just fine.
Okay, great. So far right now, the update I have is my team and I, we've decided to pick the RSPA1 for our HF receiver with a Pi. We're looking into antennas right now. And also my class schedule may overlap. Actually, it does overlap with this meeting. Since today was the first day, they let us out early. So I may pick in maybe around 8:30-ish. My class is supposed to end at 9, but we were let out early today. Besides that, we're waiting for a hurricane too. So there may be changes to our class schedules lately. Well, so that's all I have for now.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Okay, next on the list, we have, let me make sure I didn't, oh, Homan. Go ahead, Homan.
Hello, good evening. This is Yeomin. Yeah, it's been pretty busy week writing proposals and preparing for a new class coming, new semester coming up, because we are actually adopting new technology for converged learning method, like hybrid system for both online and then in-person classroom. So I've been pretty busy with that. And yeah, although I haven't really made any progress on my Magnetometer project, I am communicating with our engineers who could provide some test equipment. So my plan is to go there to test the magnetometer that Dave provided and compare that with our magnetometer, either Zenijump or Boddington magnetometer that we have. So that's our plan. I think the plan has been really well lined up. That's just me that so busy that I couldn't just make any time to devote myself to experiment. But as soon as I have some time to breathe, hopefully I can go there and then do some testing so I can get back to you with some result. So back to Ned.
Very good. And next we have Jonathan, KC3EEY.
Hi, everybody. As Nathaniel said, he's been very busy with classes now that the semester started at the University of Scranton, as have I. Most of my free time has been spent on homework so far, so... but a lot of fun things planned for the semester, which should involve some more work on the VLF module. That's all I have right now. Back to the net.
Fine business. And next on the list, we have Michael, AA8K. Go ahead, Mike. Fine business. And we next have Tom McNerman. Go ahead, Tom.
Well, thanks, Dave, and welcome to everybody. I got a chance to look over Scotty's magnetometer schematic updates. Those look great. I like what Scotty did so much that I copied him and put the same table on the receiver and sent XA14 to Scotty this afternoon. Starting to look at impacts of timing performance numbers on the receiver for various different science measurements. Hopefully I'll have some of those done by time of DCC. And back to the group.
Well, fine business. Now, if I am not mistaken, the names keep jumping around, but I think I've covered everybody, so we should be open for general discussion.
Hey, Tom. Oh, we got to get together sometime with John, I guess, and talk about our three-way presentation for DCC.
Okay. Well, he's going to need three slots for his paper. It's incredibly comprehensive. And I suspect it's become a highly referenced paper.
I started looking at that paper, and that's a significant. Amazing. Yeah, I just got it open on my screen on Sunday, and I did not have time to keep reading it, but it looks very impressive.
It's like 40 pages.
I know. Well, and so, okay, so this is kind of how my life has been in the past week. So he sent me that paper. Steve Serwin sent me another Tapper paper that he's submitting that's also about 40, 40 to 50 pages or something like that. So I keep getting all these papers from these people who are saying, you know, please look at this. So, I mean, it's really impressive.
But at least you won't have insomnia. You'll have plenty to read to put yourself to sleep.
Yes.
Yeah, we'll help you out with the really short GCC papers on my end.
Thanks, Tom. I appreciate it.
Yeah, because I don't know, Tom, what you have to say on the receiver is pretty much just a summary, I guess. And kind of the same on the DE. This is a summary, but then the clock module is really the important new thing.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen a comprehensive set of measurements in so many different dimensions on GPS. I think that's going to be an extraordinarily popular paper.
But anyway, I think the plan is he's going to have an entire slot to talk about his paper. Good. And then the three of us are going to get together and we're going to have one slot to talk about all of the hardware, aggregate hardware. So I don't know, you know, it might be, I was thinking how to do this. And they want them pre-recorded, so we could actually do a three-way Zoom conference, just a session, and record that, and then and have one 30-minute piece, well, maybe be 20-minute with some time for Q&A, as opposed to having each of us do like a 5 or 10-minute thing and then have them have to be sequenced.
Yeah. I think that works pretty well. Christina Collins, Phil Erickson, and I did that a little while ago for the QSO Today Expo, and it worked out.
Okay. So what did you just do, a three-way Zoom, record it, and then trim it and submit that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So yeah.
How do you do the trimming? Is there an editor or something that you use to?
Phil did that part. When I did similar things, I have a MacBook over here, so I've used the Mac's video editing software. But so I'm not sure what the best thing to use is.
But Scott, it's just MP4 editor, right?
Scott.
Yeah.
Scotty, it's just like editing DCC or Dayton or any of those other meetings we've had.
Okay, well, I haven't done that either. So, but it's just an MP4.
MP4. I just usually open it in a video editing. And if there's dead time or whatever, you can just cut that out.
Okay, because I've done MP3 audio files, but never video stuff. So
yeah,
I'm sure we can, between the three of us and maybe some help, I'm sure we can get it edited and submitted.
Okay.
Yeah. So I was going to ask. So Scotty, you're saying you worked it out with John regarding those pins for the magnetometer?
No, I have not done that yet.
Oh, you haven't. So that's still on the list.
That's still on the list.
Okay.
And I hope we don't have to change it because my CAD guy is getting really irritated at me for making continued changes for a completed project. He views it as completed. And I get it, but, you know, it's got to be right too. So.
Yeah. Well, I understand that from dealing with contractors in the.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. My view of complete and their view of complete are not the same.
Yes. And his problem is that he's really busy now. So. This, right. I'm trying to kind of squeeze in this extra work that he has to do is interfering with his other jobs. So he gets a little irritated at me, but you know, that's okay. I'll deal with it because he's got to do the DE coming up here pretty quick. So he's got to get those other jobs done so he can have time to lay out our board.
Right.
So,
yeah.
And if he thinks the magnetometer was hard, wait till he gets to this 672 pin BGA that he has to connect up. Because the magnetometer is only two layer. Mm-hmm. So that's what makes it hard.
So does he actually work for your company or do you contract out?
Oh, we contracted out. He's
What is it that's made it difficult for him?
What, on the board?
Yeah.
The small size. Oh. And the fact that we added components is he's not happy with because he basically he says, well, this is a full relay out and rip up and relay out. And I go, no, we're not doing that. We're doing modifications because I don't want to put another week's worth of work on him. So the problem is that the components that we only added about 5 components, very small ones, but they are added in areas where there's just flat no room to put them. So you have to make compromises. Like we had to encroach a little bit underneath the magnetometer plug-in module. And fortunately, well, on the one end, it was on the digital end, which I don't really care too much about, but I want to keep stuff away from those coils. And so we ended up having to put an additional bypass capacitor in, and we put it down on the bottom. It's not really near the coils. I mean, it's further away from any one of the coils than the coils are from each other. So, and besides that, these are the coils that we're not really using because they're up on the plug-in board anyway. Yeah. But he's having difficulty, and you know, it's the same I always get from, oh my God, it'll never work. And then he figures out a way to make it work. So it's just like, it's got to look hard, and that gets your brain engaged, and then you go in and you just make it work. And so I sat with him this morning for a few hours, and we walked through each change, and he says, well, will this work? Will that work? And so the big upshot was I moved the fuse over next to the Raspberry Pi, and I put it in line. So when you plug two units together, you don't have two fuses in series, because the fuses have a couple hundred milliohms of resistance. And so you really don't want any more of them in series. And you really don't need a fuse on the far end anyway, because there's no power out there. It's a receiver of power. There's no power supply by the rear. So if you short out the far end board, there's nothing to damage on it, because it doesn't produce any power. So I rearranged that. Well, it turns out it moves the connections from one side of the board to the other. So that means the part needs to go on the other side. Well, there's no room on the other side. So he says, well, we get to put parts on the back. And no, you can't put parts on the back, because you got 4 millimeters clearance to the data engine, and we're not going to make any restriction. We're not putting parts on the back of either board. So you can't do that, and you can't put it underneath the magnetometer, the plug-in module, because I want to keep that all clear. So he's saying, well, you're over-restricting me. You're making it so I can't do this. Well, I said, look, it's the 5-volt line. It's going out on 100 meters or 100 feet of cable. Another 3 inches of 5-volt trace is not going to make any difference at all. So we left it where it was and just wired it up. Yeah, okay, so you got a long trace on 5 volts. Big deal. You got a long cable on 5 volts too, so it doesn't make any difference. But being the purist type, you know, he wants it to be, you know, all the 5 volts should be all together. We shouldn't run it across the board if we don't have to. Well, sorry, we have to. By the way, his name is Dave also. So we got three Daves. We're
a lot more than that, all in all.
Yeah. Anyway, he got it all done. I thought I'd see the final, you know, results today, this afternoon, but I haven't seen them yet. I'm sure I'll get them tomorrow. And then we'll be ready to, you guys want to see another quick look, but which we should do. But please try not to change anything, because unless it's really necessary, get me in more trouble. And then we'll be ready to go build boards. And the way I'm going to work that is I'm going to try to get it's going to be hand assembled, but machine reflowed. And the solder mask the solder paste is going to be stenciled on. I'm going to try to get the guy to build me just two boards that I can test first before we build all of a lot of 50 boards. And that way, if there's some problem that makes them not work that we didn't catch, I mean, all these eyes, experienced eyes that have looked at it, and if we all miss the same thing and it doesn't work, well, then we can fix it at minimal cost. And if not, then we'll have, you know, in a couple, 3 weeks, we'll have a lot of boards to play with.
That will be really good.
Certainly will be fun. I have to go dig out all my Raspberry Pis.
And so then that's where we're going to be continuing to talk with Hyomin and John Gibbons about, you know, what our testing plan is.
Yeah, and where we get the most results, or any results, anybody that can help.
Yeah. So I guess we can tell people what we're planning on doing right now is I'm planning on using some of the grant money to purchase, you know, basically a set of these beta boards, and we want to send them to appropriate beta testers. So we were thinking that Dave Witten, you should definitely get one or two, and Jules should get some. And we also think we want to send them over to Case Western, because they're actually going to integrate them with a low cost personal space weather station. And they're also you know, trying to get that system working. So I think some will go over there, and then some will probably go to Hyomin. And then I'm not sure, Bill, if you need them yet or not.
You're talking about sample magnetometers or sample data engines?
Sample magnetometers.
Yeah, that's probably not real critical for me right now. I mean, if you got extra ones, I'd be happy to.
Well, I think the thing for us to do with them is really to send them over to Case Western, because John is going to be integrating them into the low-cost personal space weather station system, and he is going to incorporate their data collection into that ecosystem there. So then he'll be able to be sending out both low-cost personal space weather radio data and also magnetometer data from the same nodes.
So how does that ecosystem merge with what Bill's doing, the software Bill's doing?
It's going to be compatible. Bill's, as far as from what we've discussed, Bill's going to set up an API, and then John has to match the API. But Bill's been going to all of the Case Western meetings, so Bill and John do communicate on a regular basis.
Yeah, and also the thinking now, and Nathaniel kind of came up with this idea, is that the package that I'm using now to simulate the data engine can act as a go-between between their hardware and the local host. So we could have a common local host for both the grape and the tangerine with the DE simulator that I wrote being customized to talk to the grape hardware. I mean, that's still a concept in progress, but it might be possible to do that.
So it sounds like it's more likely that the magnetometer is going to reside on the local host along with the grape, if it is a grape, or along with nothing else if it's a tangerine. Is that correct statement? Rather than plug into the data engine, it's going to plug into the local host.
It probably makes for less complications because it's one less data stream that you got to support from the data engine. I mean, what we got is complicated enough without having, if we can do it another way, architect it another way, probably a good idea.
So the thing I want to make sure is that the magnetometer will plug onto a Raspberry Pi along with the grape board. So that's why John has to get some of these boards, so he can make sure that they play together. Physically, they play together. I think they will, but, you know, the magic is in plugging them together for real and seeing if you thought of everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that.
Because I don't think the grape board is designed to have headers on the top so it can be in a stack. I think it's got just the connector below, and it plugs onto the Pi, and then there's nothing on the top. Whereas the magnetometer is designed, the local board is designed to plug onto the Pi and then have headers sticking up that you can plug the grape board onto that just feed through. It's a connector with long tails. And assuming that we don't have any clearance problems, then it should work.
I presume this is designed to work with the existing remote board, the remote mag? Because you're not going to want to put a magnetometer on this, on the mag hat, and then put another board on top of that.
No, you're not going to put a magnetometer on the local version, because it'll be out in the yard somewhere.
Yep.
So. But the intention is to have pairs of these, where one board has the magnetometer, the other does not. And the one that does not have the magnetometer goes on the local, on the SBC.
So this board is going to be the remote board as well?
Yes, same board.
Oh, okay.
You change one jumper. Well, change one jumper. I guess it's a little more complicated, but it's so similar that it's just jumped out that, well, you can make one board to do both. And it kind of fell out when the magnetometer comes on a module. So it makes perfect sense to, you can move it.
Right. Yep. Okay.
Yeah.
But it will also work with the existing one, presumably. We haven't changed it. Yeah.
Yeah, it depends on, I think, which version of Dave's board you have. I don't know what, because I'm concerned with the addressing. Maybe it'll be different, but it will work, is the theory.
Right. Well, the addressing on Dave's card is configurable with some cuts and solder.
Well, so you can configure it the same way as the hat then, if you wanted to. Yeah. So, Dave, do you have the latest schematic of the one of the board that everyone has that they're using for testing?
Well,
or is that not necessarily the same one that everyone has?
Well, everyone has the same thing, but the question is whether I have a copy of the schematic.
No, we don't.
Yeah, it's not exactly right. And because I either went ahead and started editing it by mistake, or I don't know. I have a feeling that the one that's most correct is probably what I sent to Scotty. And anything after that, do you by any chance still have what it was I gave you?
Oh, Dave, I'm a pack rat. I have everything. Now, whether I can find it or not.
Yeah.
But it was the one too. Early on, right? The very beginning.
Not real early on. It's the thing I gave you when I said after it was working and just before you started working on your version of this board.
Sounds nice.
I sent you where I was at that point. Yeah. I think I either
late June or something like that.
I've got one March 31st.
That's later.
That might be
too late. The schematic I think most of us have been working from is the 0011.
Well, that's just because I changed the number on that. I was doing something wrong that caused if the schematic may be 11, but the board may be 10.
I have a board that's 10 that does not match the 11 schematic.
Yeah. Well, I made one or two. I was still fighting with that PMOD thing.
Okay.
And there are only one or two small differences, but they are.
Well, there are addressing differences that on the 11 version have to be patched around. The 10, it's okay. I was able to, it's not hard to reverse engineer it and all, but it would be nice to have the schematic for the, I don't know what the date is on this. It's 0203.
Is 00.0.07, January 25th.
Oh, that's much earlier than.
That's the very first one I got from you, Dave, I think.
Yeah, no, it's called the very last one.
Schematic. The title is Rev 7 Schematic 0125.
The boards that Dave sent me, they're version 0010, done 2020-02-03. And then the schematic that I've got is the 0011 2020-02-13.
Well, what I'm talking to about Scotty, I'm not talking about the schematic alone, but the whole bundle of, I sent you the whole project, the KiCad project, I believe.
Well, I got a big bundle of documents, including the RM3100 documents from PNI on March 31st. And I'm looking through here to see what files I have, and I don't. I've got the demo software. I've got the user manual from.
That's all their stuff.
It's all their
stuff. I may have stuck their stuff in with it, though.
Okay, but most of this stuff. And then I've got an extender log, a zip file. This is the extender 2020-0301 log. But all it is a, it's just a text file of log data that your measurements you had made.
Well, I'm going to have to go back and dig. I've looked, I thought everywhere, but I may still have the.
Oh, wait a minute. Hold on. I have one called the Simple Support Board. That's the different one though, right?
That's the little board. Yeah.
That's the earlier one.
Okay.
Well, it's not earlier. I was doing them at the same time.
Oh, well, that one says 2019-12-19. So at least the schematic's earlier. And that one does match the board. I know that. That's the board I have working.
I was choosing an option that I thought moved all the dates and all the stuff that identified the version of the board across all my the schematic, the everything, and it didn't. It wasn't. It meant something different, and I realize now I have to go into each one manually and change things.
Yeah, I know that the file name that you have on these are different.
On
between the little board and the remotable board.
Yeah, the little board's a separate project altogether.
Right.
Yeah, but
the dates and revs are.
I have one that's very close to the correct date. I just didn't realize I had sent you that it got contaminated with some last minute changes.
I did find a later one here, Dave, that's 009.
009.
It's dated January 30th, I think.
No, it's got to be in March.
March, okay.
And I'm kind of surprised it's...
It
may just be random whether someone downloaded it or not before it got changed.
I don't know. I could have it on a Google Drive or something somewhere.
Okay. I think I found an April 7th version. It's .11. Well, it's actually dated February 13th, but I got it in April.
Right. The February 13th is the schematic I think we've been working from.
Okay. Well, I've got that. So that's...
Yeah, that one we do have. It would be nice if there was the one before that was the February 3rd instead of the 13th. That would match the actual PC board I have.
The 3rd? Just a second. I'm looking back through my emails.
I don't remember whether I sent you it as an attachment to an email or gave you a link to it to a... you know, like Dropbox or Google Drive.
Yeah, I'm just looking through the email. So if it wasn't attached to an email, it wouldn't be here.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's all I see.
Because they get kind of big.
The thing is, it's weird because they're all interspersed. So I get some that are dated December, but I get them in April. So I don't know what the deal is with that. Okay, this is... So the board you're using actually has a 0010 on it?
The board, yeah, it does.
My board does, yeah.
Those are the ones that everybody has. You have the same as everybody.
Oh, they all say 0010 on them?
Yeah.
Because I thought that the pictures you sent had 11s on them.
There could be.
Let me take a look.
I could have grabbed some pictures from 11 because they weren't significantly different. Except that I may have put, only thing I did was I went and I put pull down resistors on.
Okay, so I've got the schematic of .10 also, the February 3rd.
There you go.
That would be, that's interesting.
Okay, well, let me do this, Dave. I'll go through my emails and I'll pull all these out and put them in separate directories and I'll zip the whole thing up and send it back to you. Will that be useful to you?
Sure, yeah.
Okay.
I have a question to ask. Like, may I have a few minutes now or later? So I wanted to, let me try to share my screen, okay? So I wanted to be very clear on the multiply constant that I have here. So what exactly it is doing? So maybe Tom can explain this. So this is a USRP source and the data type on this, if I can click, is complex integer 16, okay? And that is changed to complex. So I think it brings back to 32, complex 32. And what exactly it is doing? Is it just reducing the size of the data, or it is changing the complex 32 to again complex integer 16?
Okay, I-short to complex, I'm gonna have to look up the documentation. I can't give you a precise description exactly what it does, because I don't use I-short very often. It's hard to tell on the screen if the colors are exactly matching. Because some look kind of orange and some look kind of yellow. Typically, if they don't match, you'll get a red arrow indicating a data type mismatch. Let me do a real quick lookup on I-short to complex and see exactly what it does. Hang on.
Yeah, so I want to be very sure what exactly this multiply constant is doing. So my question is, like, it starts as complex integer 16. Now it is converted to complex. So I'm guessing it is going to again complex 32. But here we're multiplying it by certain value, which is 1 divided by 2 power 16. 1 divided by 6, 5, 5, 5, 3, 6. That is 2 power 16. 1 divided by 2 power 16.
Yeah, so the fast multiply constant is going to do a complex multiply. So it's going to divide the I component or multiply the I component by 1 over 65,000. It's going to multiply the Q component by 1 over 65,000. So that will scale the complex value accordingly. So it's taking the complex value as a 32-bit floating point I and a 32-bit floating point Q, and multiplying each of those by that constant.
So let me put the question other way around. What will be the final data type here? Because
the data size is complex.
Data type. What is the final data type being fed into this GUI sync?
Blue.
Okay, the data type is a blue box, and so it is a complex, which consists of a 32-bit floating point I and a 32-bit floating point Q.
And it was the same thing here.
Right, the blue box tells you the data type.
So if it was same data type here, and if it is same data type here, what did this do?
Okay, it scales the value of the number. Since it's a floating point number going into the fast multiply, it's a floating point number coming out. All it does is it scales it down by that factor, since you're multiplying by 1 over 65,000. So it was basically just shifting the exponent.
Yeah, so you're subtracting 16 off the exponent.
So it does not change the data type. It just reduces the value, right?
Yeah, it's just a numerical operation on the floating point numbers.
Yes, that's what I'm trying to confirm. So it is not changing. It is not changing the data type. It's just changing the values of the data, right?
That is correct.
Okay. Thank you so much. I just wanted to confirm that.
Yeah. So so the colors of the I/O boxes tell you the data type. It's blue going in. It's blue going out.
Yeah.
And so it's not doing a conversion of data type.
Yes. Thank you so much.
Okay.
So I think all of that's sounding pretty good.
So Dave Witten, I did confirm the pictures you sent do correspond to the board that I have. They all say 0010 on them, but they do not match the 0011 schematic. So it would be nice to get that earlier version that actually does match the boards we have.
I'll try to make, I'll do what I can to.
Yeah, and the other part of that is that the plots that you did of the circuit board that I have match the 11 schematic, not the 10. So that's been confusing.
Very strange.
Yeah, you've made some changes to the addressing, which the 10 actually does it right, the 11 does it wrong.
What area is it that you're talking about?
In terms of the addressing?
Yeah, those.
That's on the temperature sensor.
On the temperature sensor. The fact is, the temperature sensor is very robust as far as addressing goes. I've got some new boards. I know what you're saying. I've tried to do it right on some newer boards I've made. But the fact is, it doesn't. If I jumper those things with or without resistors, pull up, pull down, whatever I do. It seems to do what I want it to do.
The only thing is that the 0011 schematic shows them actually floating.
Yes. Well, in fact, you said something about that.
Right.
And that's the reason I went back and tried to fix it. Very often, the problem I have is I often realize some error about 2 minutes after I send the boards off to be made. And yeah, I can't bear not to go back and fix something so I don't forget what it was needed fixing. And occasionally I accidentally overwrite something.
I need to learn.
I don't have my process very good. I haven't gone to using GitHub for these things or anything like that where I can roll back.
We need to learn how to fake ourselves out so that we think we've sent the board out, but we really didn't.
Right, right.
Then we'll remember what we forgot on it.
This prototyping service is just too easy. It's so easy to send them the board and say, just do it. And it happens very quickly and often late at night when I'm not at my sharpest. I'll try to get you a schematic that corresponds to that board.
Mm-hmm.
The board itself has some, you know, severe deficiencies, but none that should get in the way of testing, I don't think.
Yeah, should work fine. Oh, one thing that you didn't send with the board was screw terminals for the 5-volt. Which I actually had some that fit on there. I put those on to make it easier to wire the 5 volts up.
I had actually just used a 2-pin header on there, mm-hmm. and, you know, and screw terminals are a good idea. But I
the SparkFun board has screw terminals, and I actually have used them on other projects of mine. So sure. If you had them.
No, I have everything here somewhere, but sacks of it.
So what do you have behind you, Nathaniel?
Oh, this is a White Alice communications system.
White Alice?
Out in Alaska. It was, I think, used it for like public telephone backhaul systems in Alaska during the Cold War era.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I learned about them when I spent a couple of happy weeks with Bill Bristow on Adak Island building the Super Darn radar out there. And mm-hmm. And they had an old White Alice station out on Adak.
Interesting.
Spent a lot of time in the nether regions of the planet.
You did?
No, I'm saying you have.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I've been both directions.
Yeah, it's quite fun. I was actually telling... I spent quite a bit of time talking to my astrophysics students about that today, telling them why they should go to grad school, all of the fantastic travel opportunities.
Right.
Yeah, it's Nathaniel, like the army.
Did you go down to the Yakos?
I only made it as far as McMurdo. I was supposed to get to an Ego, but the weather and things just logistically didn't work out. So I got close. I know.
Yeah, no, 2012, I was down there with the crew.
Mm-hmm.
Got out to Ego 5. No, Ego 3 and Ego 2, I guess.
Yeah, I was supposed to go to Ego 5.
Go to South Pole and keep going 500 miles.
Yeah, it's impressive. Yeah, in fact, I included some photos in my lecture today,
uh-huh.
which I can, if we are up for it, I can show a couple of them.
Why not?
Great. I tried to pick some that were a little bit more, I guess, off the beaten path in terms of photos here. Yeah, so this is when I first got up to Svalbard. That's the dormitory I was in. So this is a student dormitory up in the Arctic. It used to be an old coal miner's barrack.
Mm-hmm.
And then... for fun, we would play with sleds. So that's me on the sled in Svalbard. And then I got there in January, and then we were in the middle of the polar night, and then the sun gradually started coming back. And the day we first saw the sun, we had to go climb up a mountain. So it was, I think we like skied up about a 3,000 foot mountain. And when we got to the top, this is what I saw. That was the first time I saw the sun, and there were these Svalbard reindeer just out there on the top of the mountain.
Nice.
Yeah, that was really impressive.
Yeah, you've been further north than I. I've only been up to Tromsø and Andenes.
Yeah.
Andoya.
Yeah. So Hjomin here, he's been He's been probably more places than either of us. There's the Northern Lights. And then this. So one of my friends, he found a snowmobile that was buried to the handlebars in snow and ice. And so he figured out who owned it, and they sold it to him for 100 kroner. And then he spent the entire like spring break trying to dig it out of the snow. And then he started, you know, riding it around. And just as the snowmobile season was ending, we were out on a trip, not far from town, fortunately, and it actually caught fire. So we were able to get him off. And so that's the snowmobile on fire. So the town is, there's a town down there. We're up on the glacier. And yeah, that's all that was left of the snowmobile.
Whew.
Yeah, it was something else. And then this is the view from the study room at the university. Not bad.
No.
And then can you find the polar bear?
About dead center.
Yeah, right there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. And there is up close. So yeah, that was there at the that is probably about, I don't know, a half a kilometer away from the university and away from town. So the authorities were watching that thing all day. And finally they got tired of watching it, so they put it on a helicopter and flew it somewhere else so it wouldn't hurt anybody. And then this is McMurdo Station. And so I'm standing up on top of Observation Hill right here. There's one of the fuel tanks. You can see it says NSF on it. That's the main building where they have the galley and the and they have some dormitories in there as well. And then over here, this is the Crary Lab where the scientists work. And let's see, this is the ice shelf over here.
I think what you were just pointing at was the site of the old nuclear reactor.
I think that's about where I'm standing.
Oh, that could be. You're not that as high up.
Yeah, I don't think I'm. I think I took this photo as I was on my way up to Observation Hill. So I think.
I love the story of how they were decommissioning it and kept digging and digging, trying to decontaminate the site, and then realized, oh, this is volcanic rock. It's radioactive.
Whoops. Yeah. Here's Arrival Heights. I like this photo. This is panoramic.
Nice.
Yeah. And there's the Super Darn radar. So it's a 16, it's a linear phased array of 16 twin terminated dipoles, and it has a corner reflector here. And then this is used for both transmitting and receiving. And then this is 4 twin terminated dipoles used as a receive only interferometer to detect elevation of arrival measurements. There's a seal.
Looks and like the seal of approval.
Yeah, that seal was definitely approving of things. And then we were on a pressure ridge tour, which that's where I got the photo of the seal from. And the astronaut, this is Shannon Walker. She's an astronaut. She was on the tour with us. So that was kind of neat. I think while we were there, both Shannon Walker and John Grunsfeld were there. So you just never know who you're going to see at McMurdo. So there are 2 astronauts. And then this is a long duration balloon facility. So these go up on balloons and fly over the continent. It's tens of kilometers above?
Hundreds
of kilometers.
They fly at about, I guess it's 35 kilometers, 100,000 feet plus.
Yeah, okay. So yeah, but you can see here are the people. So this is a payload that's going to be carried by the balloon, and there's a person. So you can see the size for scale and how big this building is.
Our balloons were a little smaller than that, our payloads.
Yeah.
That's where I was working the first time I was down there.
Really?
Yeah, we were working on the barrel balloon project.
Oh, okay. Yeah, with Robin?
Right.
That was, yeah.
Oh, my team went on that campaign as well.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I was down there for the engineering tests.
Awesome.
Panil, may I take a few more minutes? I have another question of similar nature.
Sure. And there's a penguin, and there's a photo of Mount Erebus and my friend Monk, and it was a good time. All right. Go ahead, Dev.
Sorry. So this is for Tom, like Tom or anybody, maybe Tom. Tom, I'm trying to execute this, run this flow graph. And when I do run, like I've already run it and I get a waterfall display, and that is very slow, okay? That is very slow. So I try to put a throttle here, and I'm not sure if it is working. Okay? And when I run, I get this error. It says, warning, this flow graph contains a throttle block and another rate limiting block. Is your hardware source of sync? This is usually undesired. Consider removing the throttle block.
Yes, so you do not, you do not need a throttle because your digital RF source, your RF source, is that a file or is that a radio?
It's a data file.
Okay, then you need a throttle.
So is it in the wrong place for me to get this warning? Okay. Why am I getting the warning? And why, like this display, like this is from like remote, I'm accessing my computer in lab remotely, so it is displaying in broken way. But in the lab, when I'm there, it is very slow, and it gets, after a while, it gets jammed. Okay, so it's not a good display.
Okay. So So
what can I do about it? Like, where can this throttle be to avoid this warning, and how I can have the display more, not very slow and finally getting jammed?
Okay, right now, the flow graph thinks you have some hardware module. Is it possible that it's further, that it's off the screen there somewhere?
Oh, sorry, I lost the connection. I'm sorry. I lost the connection to my computer. Like, I was accessing the computer in my lab remotely. Yes. GNU radio, what was the command?
A companion?
Yeah, sorry, companion.
Oh, okay.
So this is what we're looking.
Yeah, can you scroll that up and down to see if there's any other blocks in there?
Where?
Okay, you have some scroll bars on the flow graph down if you go down to the side there, and you also have one on the bottom.
I don't think I have anything, okay?
Okay. Well, for some reason, it seems to think that you have a real hardware source in there. I would ignore the error message about the throttle. Okay, are you running over a network and through a router from the radio to this computer?
The answer to that is yes. And okay. Maybe should we not do that?
I'm going to guess you have congestion somewhere in your network. You're trying to run 10 mega samples of I short, and so you're running 40 megabytes per second, and you may be running into congestion in your network.
Yeah, Dev, I'll make sure we order a network card so we get around that problem.
Yes, well, I forgot to talk about this morning, and I had thought about it, but I forgot while we talked.
Yeah, we'll have to do that.
Yeah.
Okay. And Lori's out until the end of the week, so we can't order it until like later this week or next week.
Okay. So that's due to the network issue, right?
That's a possibility. You're asking your network for some pretty high performance here.
Okay. Thank you so much. Okay. Yeah, but this was not the one we were looking at. We were looking at, I think, this one. I forgot. No. Okay. Thank you. Thank you. This is not, these are not the files. The file did not open in this new launch. Okay. I have to look through it. So maybe we have discussed it. So maybe we don't need it. Thank you so much.
Depending on the data type and the sample rate, you may be easily, and if you have a router, you are stressing things out.
Probably. So instead of getting the connection from the switch, we will directly plug the N200 to the computer. That's what we're saying, Nathaniel, right?
Yeah, that if you can do that. An Ethernet switch alone is normally okay. They're very fast if you have a GigE port and you're not running other traffic through those two ports. But typically, routers will slow things down.
Okay, thank you so much.
Yeah, and I think a network card, it's only going to cost us like $20 or $40 or something like that. So it's totally reasonable.
So please, Nathaniel, my request.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I think Dave Witten's tired.
Well, I will mention that we are at our normal time, so
forgot to
that have to go.
Forgot I left my.
I'm sorry. I have been equally tired, if not more, at previous meetings.
I know you've been a lot.
Oh tired. My gosh, I've been awful.
One minor thing I thought I'd point out before we go. I put up a note on the list. I doubt it concerns too many people, but I put it up, I think, this morning about, it turns out the Odroid N pluses. I think I was trying to explain to Scotty how the bus numbering could move around. And then I got one of those N pluses from Odroid. And it turns out the I squared C buses are numbered very differently on it than in previous the regular Odroid N, and it's also different than the Raspberry Pi. It's a minor thing, but it's something to take it, to be aware of that those are, it's all smoke and mirrors, and they can be, you have to know what you're board is doing
Dave, thanks for that document. I looked through it. It looked complex.
So Dave, I had one where my N2, I did an update, and when I tried restarting your program, what I was using successfully for over a month, it went from a bus 2 to a bus 0.
Yeah, that's exactly. It's actually the operating system setup. It's the device that, you know, a few years back, let's see, Linus of Linux fame anyway, had a kind of a snit about all the different boards having such different ways they were set up. And so they started to use this device tree database system where it's all defined at boot up time. And now they can all be wildly different, but it's configured. And in this file that you're mostly not supposed to mess with, but you can. And but anyway, it's just a word of warning that on some boards, you need to know what your board is using in order for the software to work correctly. It's easily configurable. It's just a command line option, but you don't want to write. I was most worried about it getting written into the FPGA code with assumptions that we ultimately didn't wish. This is to me, it's a good reason not to have the DE talk to the magnetometer, but instead to use the single board computer, because I guess that'd be one argument for it. Maybe not. Maybe it's the wrong way. Anyway, the Raspberry Pi uses 2 and 3 or 1 and 2. The original N2s used 2 and 3, and then N plus is used as 0 and 1. I actually pointed out to the hard kernel people, and they went, "Oh wow," because it was different than their documentation. And then they finally posted, "Yeah, that's the way it is, but it's not going to change." And so they're going to leave it that way. And I just wanted people to be aware that it's a simple thing, but it will keep things from working if you don't know what it's doing. And there's also the issue of, and we really haven't completely evaluated this, there's the issue of the I squared C bus speed. The original specs states that we're going to use 100K I squared C bus speed data rate. And but the default for a lot of them these days is 400. It can be set back down to 100, and it's probably better for our purposes because we have no need to go faster that I'm aware of. And at least for the magnetometer, it's pretty simple, but they seem to be defaulting the lowest numbered bus to 400K in a lot of cases, especially the Odroids. Just wanted people to be aware of those things.
I have a question. I was wondering, for remote installations, like when the magnetometer is installed underground, it's connected back to the single board computer via I2C.
By I2C, by differential I2C running over Cat 5 or Cat 6 cable.
Oh, all right, yeah, because I remembered reading the spec a while ago, and it seemed to me like it was designed for, like, you know, components on a board and not really yes. for longer lines.
The original I2C is definitely designed for at most several boards within a box or something, separated right. by up to half a meter. But by using differential signaling and tweaking the voltages and this and that, it works. It's proved to work very well at 100 feet. And probably beyond in some cases.
And you're...
Nathaniel,
yes?
If I can, I would like to request a few more minutes, like if I can, on the question that I was trying to ask earlier.
It's fine to me if everyone else is, you know, I think they're still talking about I2C, so once they're done with that, I'm sure they'd be happy to.
I want to make sure that Hyoman has all the information he needs from me.
Yeah.
Okay. Please go ahead. And then I'll take
Hyoman, have you got all the information you need from me for your, for Gil and your people to do?
Oh, yeah. I forgot to reply to you, but I have to see whether I'm going to keep it there or bring it back to the lab and do...
Sure.
So I'll let you know.
Okay.
Yeah, but yeah. I do have all the information from you.
Okay. Well, if you don't, let me know. That's the important thing. Okay, Dev.
Thank you so much. Sorry about taking all the time. So this is to Tom. So Tom, so we're talking about this data source. So the source is not any radio source. It's a file.
Okay.
And the file is saved here.
Yeah.
While saving, I turn vector length to be 1.
Yes.
I don't know exactly why, because I think that was the suggestion made to me by the digital RF guy. So this is the digital RF data, and I have saved the data with vector length 1. So it is this data that I'm getting back here, playing back.
Okay.
So earlier
So you're not playing it back from a radio, but from a file?
Yes.
Okay.
Then earlier I asked the question about the error, and that's fine. But now I have a question. So this is saved as, I think, we can go back here. It was saved as complex integer 16. So I start with the LO here and convert to complex and try to throttle and multiply and try to see it in sync. But when I do something reverse, when I put the throttle here, like change the order of the throttle and this converter, it does not work. And it gives me an error, and I don't understand why it does not work. And that's the question.
Okay, so you have a difference in the two flow graphs. In the second one, you have vector input set to no, in the I short to complex.
Thank you. If I set vector input yes, I get error, okay?
Right. But in the other flow graph, you have it set to yes.
So yes. And here I don't get error. There is no red arrow here.
Okay. So I don't know how the digital RF source is handling the packing of the data.
Okay.
So you can try bypassing the throttle.
Yeah. So as long as I'm seeing the display, maybe I'm fine. Like, I don't need to worry much. Right?
Yeah, perhaps. I don't know how the converter handles vectors.
I was just curious, like if I put the vector yes here, I get the error here. And if I put vector no here, like okay, the flow graph looks okay, but if I run it, like it would not run. Okay. It would not show the display that earlier it showed. It gives me like all sorts of error as seen here.
Okay, on the throttle block in this flow graph, highlight it and hit the character B on your keyboard. The Bravo, B as in Bravo.
Yeah.
Okay, now try running it. Okay, there is a mismatch between how you apparently recorded the data to the digital RF source and how it's coming out. I remember seeing this error before, and there was an update to the code on digital RF that fixed this particular error.
So maybe in this flow graph, I don't get the error, so it means I have avoided it, so I'm fine. Maybe I'm fine.
Yeah, I don't know. There was an error in the digital RF, and my recollection is it gave this signature. And so you may need to talk to Phil Erickson or one of the folks at MIT. It may be a versioning or other code revision problem.
Okay. So what did the B do to this throttle?
It bypasses the throttle, so it's not doing anything.
Okay, thank you. Okay, thank you so much.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Okay, I'm going to need to run here. We're getting close to 7:30.
Thank you so much.
All right, good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
I also need to go, so I'll say 73.
I also need to go.
I guess I'll drop off.
Hey, Dave, you had a second? Dave Witten?
Yeah.
I managed to scarf up schematics for the prototype version 0, version 1, version 2, version 6, 7, 8, 10, and 11. I got schematics and board pictures of them. So do you want me to zip that up and send that to you? Would that be helpful?
That would be very helpful.
Okay, I'll just zip the whole directory up, and if it's too big, then we'll figure out a Dropbox or something.
Sure, that's great.
Okay, sure.
Thank you so much.
I appreciate 73. That. You take care, Dev.
73, Dev.
Have a good night, Dev.
73, y'all.
Nathaniel, so are we staying here to?
I think we can.
No, I mean, I'm just asking. I thought, I didn't really, did you propose like another follow-up meeting after this, or?
No, I figured we could just probably stay.
No, we already
here.
Covered, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's see. And I don't even know if this will take very long. I'm going to stop the recording.
I'm just going to drop out. Y'all take care. 73.
Thanks, Dave.
Have a good evening. Thanks, Scotty. Thanks, David.